welcome back. I am Diana Flopa, Associate Publisher for Grey Wolf Publishing, and joining us in this segment of today's program is Vanessa Matheny. She is the author of Out of the Darkness and Into the Light. It is an adventure tale. It is a dystopian tale. It is a Christian young adult novel. It is fantastic. She's going to read a little bit of it, and then we're going to have some Q&A after that. Take it away, Vanessa.
All right, thank you. I just want to set up the scene a little bit. I'm reading from chapter 5 of my book, The Bright Light, and it's actually a chapter kind of right after the massive plane crash that takes place with the main character, Abigail. And on the airplane, she sat next to this mysterious guy, and his name is Sam. So this is what I'll be reading. Abigail, are you all right? Sam's voice came through a mumbling haze. Mom, is that you? I asked through blurred vision. I tried to focus on the face that stared back at me. No, it's me, Sam. Are you hurt? My head hurts and so does my back. I really had a hard time focusing on Sam's face. I felt tired and achy all over as if someone had beaten me. Sam carefully unbuckled me. Here, lean on me and I'll lift you out of the seat. Getting out of the seat wasn't so bad. It was when I tried to stand up in what was left of the plane that was painful. I slowly looked around, and to my horror, it looked as though we had been in a war zone and lost. Chunks of the plane were missing. Many seats were mangled on top of each other, and tree limbs had punched through, killing so many people and wounding others. If help didn't come soon, they too would perish. Sam slowly walked me out of the debris. I was surrounded by several fallen and broken trees. The ground was covered with wood splinters and chunks of bark. We had crash-landed in the midst of a thick forest and mountain ranges. Where exactly are we, Sam? I asked as Sam helped me to sit up against a big tree trunk. Sam didn't reply. He only sat next to me. No matter what I did, I couldn't get comfortable. My head throbbed and my legs felt tingly as if a nerve was being pinched. I looked over at Sam, who didn't appear to be injured, and asked, "Are you hurt? How do you feel?" Awkward silence fell as Sam and I just stared at each other. Why Sam didn't answer me was strange to me. I wondered if Sam's injuries could be internal. Sam finally broke through the silence and said, "It's time." "Time for what?" I moaned. "Time for you to go." I gave Sam a quizzical look. What on earth was he talking about? Sam must have hit his head really hard, or I must have hit my head too hard, because our conversation wasn't making any sense. "Go where?" I said as I waved my hand at the obvious. "We're in the middle of one huge forest." "It's time to trust God and lean not on your own understanding," Sam replied. "You must have hit your head pretty hard, quoting the Bible. Are you okay? Do you know your name and what year it is?" I was very uncomfortable with the way Sam looked at me and the direction our conversation was heading. I tried to get up, but the pain shot down my legs and I cried out. "How can I go anywhere? I could barely walk." "Do you believe that God can heal you, Abigail?" It was the way Sam spoke that caused me to really look into those piercing blue eyes. It was as if scales fell from my eyes and I could truly see Sam for what he was. "You're an angel," I said as I touched his face with my finger and felt his smooth skin and his hair. Oh, how his hair shined and felt just as silky as it looked. Sam's only reply was, "Abigail, do you believe God can heal you?" Yeah, I mean, sure I do. "Well, that sounded pretty convincing. Just like you trust God?" I hocked a hairball. "Of course I trust God." Sam crouched down in front of me and said, "Then why are you here in the middle of the jungle?" Sam's tone was like that of a loving father, firm yet gentle. "Abigail, we can do this the easy way or the hard way. Which is it? What does this have to do with healing or trust? You're about to find out. Now, which is it?" "Well, of course the easy way." Sam stood up and looked toward the sky. "Lord, she's your child." He squatted back down and said, "Nope. The Lord says you are to do it the hard way." I narrowed my eyes. "What? What do you mean? Whoever wants to do it the hard way?" "Abigail, all of your life, you've been doing things the easy way. It's time to do it the hard way. Now get up." I didn't know angels could be so tough. Even though Sam was being tough, it was as though he was my father trying to look out for me. He gave me tough love, the kick in the pants, or as my dad would say, the good Lord placed a mountain in my way, and I woke up. I believe this was my mountain. I stood up, and all the pain was gone. I couldn't believe it, and yet, why should it have surprised me? Sam gave me the biggest smile. There, all better. Now it's time for you to go. I still didn't understand. Sam, where am I to go? Sam pointed straight into the thicket of the jungle. Will you be with me? I asked. It's not me that needs to be with you, Abigail. It's the Lord. Ask him to go with you. I was only sent to protect you and to guide you in the direction you need to go. Once I have done that, it'll be time for me to leave. How will I know where to go and when I get there? Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be open to you. For everyone who asks receives. He who seeks finds. And to him who knocks, the door will be open. Oh boy, I breathed. This can't possibly be happening. I looked quickly to where Sam was pointing and back at the crash site. I suppose I should round up supplies, I asked Sam. He smiled and said, that would be wise. One never knows how long their journey might be. Just how long will I be in the middle of nowhere? Sam's only response was, I will help you gather supplies. I was thankful for Sam's assistance. I felt sick to my stomach that I had to move the arm of a dead woman to reach for a blanket, but I knew it needed to be done. However, my thoughts were on the ones who were deeply wounded. Sam, what can we do for these few people? Will help come? They will be okay. God is with them. You may not see what I see, but there are many angels around here to escort them home. However, the Lord is telling me that there is something he would like for you to do before you go. Yes, of course. What is it? Sam respectfully stated, the Lord wants you to ask him. Looking the crash site over and at the few wounded people, I asked the Lord what he would like me to do. My eyes immediately went to a woman who was resting her head on a rock. Blood stained her hand as she tried to apply pressure on her wound. Her body was shaking from the pain and shock. I instantly went to her. A medium-sized piece of metal protruded from her left rib. It looked deep, and she was losing a lot of blood. Having no experience in the medical field, I left it alone. Her face was pale, and I could tell she didn't have much time left. The lady reached out and grabbed my arm. In a shallow breath, she cried, "Please help me. I don't want to die. I'm scared." "You don't have to be scared to go to heaven. God is here with you," I reassured her. "God? I haven't talked to God in years. Why would he be here with me, and what makes you think I'll go to heaven?" "Because God's word is true. He'll never leave you nor forsake you." "But what if I'm the one who did the leaving?" "Then all you have to do is ask for forgiveness and ask him back into your heart." Her breathing became shallow with each word. "You think it's that simple? I have spent most of my life living for myself. I used to have a relationship with Jesus, but after my husband died, I got angry with God. I left him right where I left my husband, in the graveyard." I was stunned. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know how to soothe this woman of such deep sorrow, sorrow that was more than just a flesh wound. She was spiritually wounded, lost, and feeling all alone. How could I get her to believe that Jesus still loved her? In my mind, I quickly prayed, "Lord, give me your words to say, because only your words can soothe her." She cried out in pain and squeezed my hand. "Please, don't leave me. Talk to me. It comforts me to hear your voice." I grabbed hold of her hand and looked intently into her eyes. I boldly took the Lord's words that were engraved in my own heart and spoke them to her. "What's your name?" "Meredith," she whispered in a weak voice. "Meredith, have you ever heard the story of the prodigal son?" Weakly, she shook her head no and said, "I'm afraid to admit I didn't really read the Bible very much." I made myself comfortable and began to tell her the story of the prodigal son from the book of Luke. There was this man who had two sons. The younger son said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the inheritance." So the father divided up his estate between the two sons. Soon after, the younger son gathered all his belongings and his half of the estate and headed off to a distant country. While there, he squandered all his wealth in wild living. After famine had hit the land, he became in great need. So he hired himself out to a citizen in that country to go to work in his field feeding pigs. As he was feeding the pigs, he longed to eat. Even the pods he was feeding to the pigs looked good enough to eat, but no one gave him anything. It was at that moment he came to his senses and said, how many of my father's hired men have food to spare? And here, I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father. Meredith's eyes ran with tears as she squeezed my hand. Oh, what if Jesus doesn't take me back? Did the boy's father take him back after living wildly? I smiled and said, oh, yes, and so much more. Meredith whispered, go on. So the younger son thought about what to say to his father. Father, I have sinned against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men. He got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him, filled with compassion for his son. The father ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him excitedly, exactly what he practiced. Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. I gently placed my hand on Meredith's face, looked into her eyes, and continued. But the father said to his servant, quick, bring the best robe and bring it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate, for the son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found, and so they celebrated his son's return. I saw hope in Meredith's eyes. Meredith, you may have done the leaving, but God didn't. He is right here waiting to wrap his arms around you, to place a robe and sandals on your feet, to throw you a big welcoming home party, all because he loves you. Now, I don't know why your husband had to die, but I do know that we shouldn't blame God or be angry with him when things don't go our way, or when we don't understand why things happen the way they do. That is where our trust and faith come into play. We have to have faith that God is in control and trust him that everything will work out for those who love him. I also believe that by asking for forgiveness for being angry with him, he'll forgive you. You really think so? I know so. I believe what his word says to be the absolute truth. I do wish to see Harold. I know he's in heaven, Meredith gasped. It's been so long, I forgot how to pray. Will you help me? Why not pray like the prodigal son? Meredith wheezed. Father, I'm sorry I sinned against you. Please forgive me. I need you. Be with me now. Tears stung my chapped face as I rejoiced that she gave her life over to Jesus Christ. She winced in pain and whispered hoarsely, I feel at peace and don't feel so afraid anymore. That's good, Meredith, I said as I pushed back a strand of her gray hair across her forehead. Meredith struggled to take a breath as she said, I have something in my pocket I need to give to you. Could you get it out for me? I reached into her left pants pocket and pulled out a small metal rectangular pill box. She placed her hand on mine and tried to say more, but she was too weak to speak. It's okay, Meredith. Take your time. You must, she gasped. Give this to... Meredith passed out. Give it to whom, Meredith? To whom am I to give this? I asked carefully, trying to wake her. In a low whispering voice, she said, the angel is coming. With a weak hand, she raised it as if to grab a hold of the angel's hand and closed her eyes. Her hand dropped, and she breathed her last breath. I sat there staring at her and the pillbox, wondering what this was all about. I opened the pillbox, and inside was a crumpled up Bible page and a skeleton key that was the size of the box. I unraveled the paper to read it, but I was startled when I felt Sam's hand rest on my shoulder. The Father says, thank you, Sam whispered down to me. I got up and said, no, thank you, Lord, for opening my eyes to see that you are truly in control and that everything does happen for a reason. I, too, need to trust you. Up until now, I have forgotten that you do work out everything for the good of those who love you. Every situation has its purpose. My being alive instead of dead from this plane crash isn't just a miracle in itself. There is a greater purpose here. I looked over to the angel. Isn't there, Sam? Yes, and this is just the beginning.
Thank you very much. When I first read this manuscript, I was so taken by it because it's such a page-turner. There's so much action happening in this book. What was your inspiration for the story?
Well, actually, 16 years ago, I was going through a very rough period. Part of the testimony is I was going through a lot of stuff to where I almost committed suicide. And I cried out to God and I said, if you're really there, then you need to have my husband call me right now or I'm going to take these pills. And that's when God showed up. And a year later, that whole year, I really dedicated my life to Christ. And a year later, which a while ago, the Lord revealed to me, that's when he downloaded the book to me. And so for a period of 16 years, I've been holding on to that promise that he said that he was going to get it published, and he would give me tidbits of the book, and so that's just been the journey.
Okay. This is a really wonderful story, because not only does it have an extraordinary message, but it also has a lot of action and adventure. There are... It's a dystopian piece, as we said earlier, so it is set in the future, and there's some great technology involved. There's a diamond heist involved. There's so much in this book, and I know you say that God handed it to you, but on your creativity end of it, how much of that came from, for lack of a better word, prophecy, or how much of it came from your creativity?
I have to be honest. God has given me the gift of creativity, but I literally had to take time and pray, and he would just give me the downloads. A couple years ago, I had given my manuscript to an editor, and she said technically it wasn't ready for publication because the original setting that I had was just a mayor taking over the town. And she said in the United States, that wouldn't really happen. So you either got to go fantasy or apocalyptic. And so I'm like, well, how am I going to do that with the diamonds and make that up? And God downloaded the locusts. And he says, why not take them out from the book of Revelations? And I depict the locusts right out of the book of Revelations. I describe them just like they are in the book of Revelations. And as far as technology, I'm excited because the sequel, I get into more of the description and the technology of the locusts.
Oh, good. I was going to ask you about the sequel because I'm sitting here waiting for it. I've been waiting almost a year for the sequel, and that's what you do. So, and I know that this is not just a sequel situation. This is a series.
Yes.
There are going to be many books. Five, I think?
Possibly five. Okay. It's looking that way, yeah.
Okay. So, can you give us a little hint of what comes next in the sequel? I don't want you to give us any spoilers, but can you... My biggest question, for anybody who's read the book, and for those of you who haven't, this will be a really good reason for you to read the book. I really like the symbolism of the comforter, the blanket that has been created, that has a map on it to where the diamonds are. It's very, very cool. And I know that that blanket goes on into the sequel because the main character takes it with her. So I'm kind of interested. Can you tell us a little bit about how that blanket works in the sequel without giving away too much?
I'm trying to figure that out, actually. I'm trying to really make sure that I continue to incorporate it. And I'm right now in the process of praying about more secrets that are embroidered into the quilt. And I don't know if I'm giving it away, but on the quilt, the quilt is designed like the town. She sewed it exactly in the map of the town. And the old town had an apple orchard, and the apple orchards are actually these ruby red diamonds that are sewn into it that I will disclose a little bit to taunt you with. Those rubies are going to become a vital key into the catacombs, which are in Africa. That's one of their main goals in the second book, is they need to go to Africa, and I can't tell you why, because you got to read the first one to understand why they need to go to Africa. But there is even more action-packed in the sequel. I mean, there's one event after another that takes place that catapults all the other events of some of the team have to go to Africa while this other traumatic event has already occurred, and the war with Damien with the low locusts, they're being threatened, and we'll have another invasion of the locusts, in specifically in Cedarville.
To hear you talk about the upcoming sequel and how much action is in the sequel is really exciting to me, because when I first read this book, as I've told you before, Christian novels are not usually my thing. And I started reading this book, and I got so captivated by the story, I almost forgot it was a Christian novel, because the theme of Christianity is so well sewn into the story and into the characters that it just becomes an inherent part of the journey you're on when you read the book. And there was so much action in the first book. I literally read it in one sitting. I sat down, I read it, I didn't do anything else because I was so captivated by it. So to hear you say that there's more action in the second book has me a little overwhelmed.
Well, I love the acting and I love TV series and stuff, so I actually get inspired by watching TV shows and stuff. So there's some, like for example, The Quilt. I actually got that off of this one TV show called Prison Break, where the guy had the map of the prison as a tattoo all over his body. And so when I watched that and I walked away and I was praying, all of a sudden, The Quilt was born. How it could be the map to the underground mining facilities to find the diamond, which gets used in the sequel. So as far as, I just want to mention quickly, as far as the Christian, you know, I had taken a writer's school a few years ago, and that was one of the things that my editor said, you're too preachy. And, you know, with my intimacy with Jesus Christ, I don't want to be preachy to people, because that's not going to get anywhere with anybody, and people don't like it. And so I'm like, Lord, how are you going to incorporate your message without coming across preachy? And it was just all God, as far as him having the characters falling in love with the Word of God, because their Bibles are stripped, and it's a major punishment if they get fined with a Bible. They get crucified, burned at the stake. There's other punishments that are in there that you'll have to find out and read what happens to some of the townspeople. So,
it is really a great book with a message of strength and belief, and that can be carried over no matter what your religious preference is.
And forgiveness.
And
it's
yeah,
just dripping
that's huge.
With forgiveness.
Yes, that is huge in this book. And I think that was the biggest draw for me, was that it had such a strong message of forgiveness, which is something we don't read in a lot of literature today. So I really appreciated that. All right, so thank you again for coming. I know you came all the way from Alpena to do this today, and I'm really
Gaylord,
pleased.
Actually.
Gaylord,
well, yeah.
Close. It's up there
45
by the thumb thing, right? So I guess the last time I saw you, we were in Alpena.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate you making the drive down, and I hope you'll be able to hang out and speak with our audience a little bit one-on-one, perhaps.
Yeah.
And thank you all for coming. Again,
thank
Vanessa's
you.
Book is Out of the Darkness and Into the Light. It is available on the Grey Wolf Publishing website and on Amazon, and also for the Kindle. And again, congratulations on
thank
your
you.
New daughter-in-law.
Yeah, thank
how
you.
Exciting.
It was. It was nice being out in California.
Yeah.
In the sun.
Thank you again for coming out.
Yeah, you're welcome.